Welcome to the Darker Side Podcast. This is a podcast where we delve into the darker side of our existences. The morbid, the macabre, the spooky, and the absurd are all fair game as we discuss murder, UFOs, cryptids, creepypasta, and the paranormal. I'm your host, David Pottle, and as always, my co-host, Forrest Smith. How are you tonight, Forrest?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing well, brother. Doing well. Good to be back doing episode 4.
Oh, definitely.
Again, we have my lovely wife, Rachel Pottle, here for the episode.
Hi, guys.
Hey!
I'm excited to be back.
I'm so happy that you're back.
You had fun on episode 3, huh?
I did have a lot of fun in episode 3. I'm excited to do another one. This is going to be great.
Yeah, I'm glad you're back. This is going to be super, super awesome. So we've got some awesome, fun stuff for you guys. You want to get into it?
Heck yes.
All right, let's start off with our first news story. This is a news story that... That comes from the National Public Radio. They did a little story on this. It goes a little like this. Washington man charged in case involving gingerbread house full of child porn.
What?
What?
Yep, a secret gingerbread house deep in a forest sounds like something from a fairy tale, but investigators in Seattle say the one they found was anything but. Now... 56-year-old Daniel Woods faces charges of possession of depictions of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct, according to the Seattle Times. An employee for Washington's Department of Natural Resources discovered bedding, food, and large amounts of child pornography in an elaborate treehouse cabin in the Barker Sonokolomi. It's probably a native... name National Forest about 50 miles east of Seattle in November 2006. This set off a month-long federal investigation that eventually led to Wood. Forest Service employees had known about the treehouse for about 7 years, but nobody knew exactly who built it. The last time it had been inspected was nearly 3 years ago, and no photos of the cabin existed. The employee with the DNR heard rumors of the cabin and decided to try to find it. He looked into it for 5 separate occasions, and then finally found the treehouse in its cache of porn. It's freaking crazy.
What?
So this sicko has this crazy, weird gingerbread house treehouse. You saw the picture. It looks a lot like
a gingerbread house.
Yeah, or like something at a Hansel and Gretel for sure.
We're gonna have to post that.
Yeah. It looked like a gingerbread house on the outside. The cabin was dark brown in color and built approximately 8 feet off the ground, according to FBI Seattle's office. There was a porch around the structure in the front door, and windows on the sides, as well as a pitched roof and a ladder from the ground to the porch. But when you looked inside, the employees found something startling. On all 4 walls were framed pictures of fairy-like features, or what appeared to be young girls, approximately 8 to 12 years old, per FBI reports. The employees took some of the photos to show to law enforcement and then returned with a detective from the King County Sheriff's Office. Detective Christopher Myers found an envelope that contained more pornographic images of young girls, along with an SD card of thousands of images of child pornography on it. The photos and SD card were turned over to Seattle FBI for further investigation. In a subfolder slugged fairies, the FBI found pornographic photos of young girls dressed as fairies. Some of these photos were taken inside the cabin, investigators determined.
That's gross.
What? Eventually, investigators were able to match Wood's DNA to samples collected from paper cup found in the cabin. He will be arraigned on March 26th and is ordered not to have any contact with minors, without exceptions.
Well, no shit.
No, Jesus.
I mean, if you're going up for trial, because, you know, you're a pedophile, you probably shouldn't be around kids.
No, yeah. It's fucking crazy, though.
Just saying.
He's had this little kiddie porn fairy tale land that he's built up there out of just pure sickness and absolute...
What?
It's crazy how people's brains work.
It's like, nuts how people
to this guy are. Though like that's what he's supposed to do, or that's his urge and that he has to fulfill, and it's like why
right why? I don't get it either. Like I'm absolutely floored by the whole concept or present, you know, just absolutely mind-boggling. I don't
could probably make a horror film out of this.
Well, without a doubt. It would be a weird serial killer.
I wouldn't want to watch
serial rapist thriller, you know.
It'd be horrible.
No.
It would sell, sadly, though.
Yeah, unfortunately. But again, that's why we do the Darker Side podcast. Yeah, like, we bring this horrible information to you so that you guys are, you know, you can hopefully, we're not trying to make too light of it, but I mean, you know, this piece of shit, though. What a horrible, horrible person. Again, yep. Wow.
And corner of the government.
People in the jails don't like people who touch children, do they? No. Oh, he'll get his.
Oh, yeah. Get something shoved up.
Hopefully he does.
His pooper.
His rectum.
So that's pooper? That's what it looked like, guys.
Oh, wow. It does look like a gingerbread house. Oh, it my God. Like, as a small child, I'd be like, oh, my God, it's so cute.
Yeah. That is cool. Until you get in there.
Yeah, and then creepy. It's a this guy's giant nightmare.
Dressing you up like fairies and then kind of molest and rape you, which is completely horrible nightmare for these poor kids.
We're going to have to post that on our website. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there we'll post a link to the story and the picture of it as well. So that's story number one. It's a pretty gruesome story.
And, you know, it's funny. It's like the government blames gay people. It's like, where's the problem with America?
No, it's these psychopaths. These little kid peddlers and shit like that. Boris, you got a new story for us today?
So what I have today is a story from what I got from Gizmodo. And supposedly, a lady got shot by her oven.
How is that even possible?
I stumbled upon this. I'm like, fucking A, I gotta read this shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my God. Okay, so let's go. Among items on the short list of things that shouldn't be stored in an oven, live ammunition ranks near the top, just below live babies and gasoline. That's because...
Don't put babies in the oven. Don't put babies in the oven. No babies in the oven.
Good Lord.
Okay.
So what?
That's because, as Mythbusters has taught us, and one Florida woman learned this week, live ammo and high temperatures make for an explosive combination.
Yeah, duh. No shit. If you didn't know that already, then there's some major issues with you. You didn't need to learn that on Mythbusters.
That's so fucking bad, right?
Well, where did this take place?
Let's
Florida.
It was a Florida woman.
Oh my
Florida. It's in Florida.
You can't be more right. You cannot be more fucking right.
The thing with Florida too is a lot of people don't realize they have like this policy in their state where anything that happens can be released to the media without question. So I mean, that's why we get a lot of these crazy ass stories from Florida. Because they're allowed to put it all out there.
I guess it's kind of probably why we hear so many stories from them.
But people do the stupidest crap in Florida, too,
So
though.
Did she actually get shot by this thing?
Let's see here. So going forward, Alaya Walker just wanted some waffles. So the 18-year-old Florida resident who was visiting a friend in St. Petersburg, 25-year-old J.J. Sandy, turned on his oven to preheat. Unfortunately, she failed to check that the oven cavity was clear. It wasn't. Sandy had actually stashed a spare clip from his .45 caliber Glock 21 in there, and when the temperature rose sufficiently, the magazine exploded and sprayed Walker's leg with casing fragments.
Oh, wow. But, like, what the fuck do you have an extra shell, a clip of shells, bullets, doing in your fucking oven?
Right.
Of all places. Put it in the cabinet below or above. Nope. Why the oven? The oven takes so much time. You know, even if you're thinking from a standpoint that, you know, I'm going to run through my house. I'm going to clear my first clip. I'm going to get into a fucking fight with why?
Yeah.
But, you know, and you're stashing clips in the around the house. The fucking last place I'm ever going to put a clip, if I'm like danger room in my house or whatever, so that I have, is in the fucking oven.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. In the fucking oven.
Ridiculous.
And it's that supposedly... These rounds will discharge at temperatures as low as 208 degrees Fahrenheit, but luckily, there were only four remaining in the 13-round clip when
Jesus
it went off.
Christ.
Well, that's still really fucking horrible. Four rounds, I mean, shoot your dog, kill your dog, baby.
Could have killed
shot
kid.
Her leg. Like,
toddler.
You know, I could have preheated the oven for a pizza. When it reached the temperature, those things could have gone off and, you know, my kid gone, my kid's there or...
Yeah.
Again, like you said, the dog or family members. It's kind of so stupid.
Toddler.
That's like a Darwin Award type of thing. you know.
It's so bad, but it's like, you know, it's just, and I was just thinking, like, you know, I have the same problem with where, you know, with when I do stuff, when I cook stuff in the oven, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes if something is left in the oven, especially if grandmother leaves something in the oven.
We've done it with pizza boxes.
I always check now. Always.
I mean, let's face it. A lot of people don't check their ovens before they turn it on.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm glad it's a pizza box and not a
magazine.
A magazine clip full of bullets.
Four bullets.
Yeah, four bullets.
It's sad that we actually have to say, luckily, it was only four bullets out of, what, the 13 magazines?
Yeah, it probably would have been a 12 or something bullets in there, but that's still fucking crazy, man.
Mm-hmm.
Only in Florida.
And supposedly, so this update on it, Walker was admitted to a local area hospital with very minor injuries, and Sandy was not charged with anything as he possessed the proper concealed weapons permit. The oven, unfortunately, is not expected to survive.
The poor oven.
That stupid tagline.
Oh, the oven.
That's so punny and stupid.
That's fucking crazy.
Oh, my God.
Not charged with anything as he possessed the proper concealed weapons.
He had the proper concealed weapons. I mean, the weapon was concealed properly.
Yep.
His munitions weren't. There's no law for that. Doesn't say that he can't store it in his fucking oven. Yep, they suggest probably not to.
Yep.
But I'm pretty sure the law doesn't dictate where you store it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah,
crazy news story too. Down the hatch. Florida.
From Florida.
Serial child molesters to
evil ovens out for revenge.
Yeah, in Florida. Oh, good Lord. All right, guys, we're going to get to our creepypasta here. This one's a little longer than normal. Just to give you guys a heads up, so
sounds good.
Bear with me, I'm gonna get through it, but it's juicy, so
nothing wrong with long sometimes.
No, I guess it all depends on what you're talking about there for us. and Rachel, both of you.
Now I get it.
Oh, good Lord. Awesome. All right, guys. So the story here is called "Within the Darkness." It all started after moving into my new house. Yeah, that's pretty cliche. Believe me, I know. But it's what happened. I never experienced anything supernatural before. Though interested, I never really experienced anything to happen to me. I am able to rent the house for pretty cheap. I didn't think anything of it because it was old and not in the best of neighborhoods, so I guess I just got a good deal. After moving everything in, things were fine for a while. I don't remember exactly when it started because it seemed so minor at the time. I'd leave a light on and in the kitchen or in the bathroom and come back and find it off. Honestly, I thought I was just forgetting that I turned them off already when I came back. After a while, I began to wonder, and I started leaving a couple lights on purpose. Sometimes nothing would happen. Sometimes I'd come back to find the lights turned off. By now, I figured out that something was off. I wasn't really scared, but just confused. I thought maybe something was wrong with the electronics. I started leaving lights on a bit more often because I thought I might be able to get some signs of why they would be randomly shutting off. That's when it started to take another turn. The first real time I remember something crazy happening was I left the kitchen and living room light on while I was asleep. I woke up in a deep rumbling growl coming from the kitchen. Now from the bedroom, you can't see down the hall to the living room, and that room is connected to the kitchen. I remember waking up and thinking that there was an animal or something in my house. I looked down the hall towards the living room to see the light darken. Somebody had flicked off the light from the kitchen. A low growl came, this time from the living room, and I nearly screamed as I saw something bolt across the length of the hall opening, and then the living room light went off. I couldn't tell exactly what it was, though. It just seemed like a black shadow or something. Didn't really matter. I was scared shitless. I bolted from my bed then and threw on the bedroom light, expecting something to be in the room and getting ready to come after me. Nothing. There wasn't anything in the room. I let out a low breath and then I slowly moved down the hall into the living room. Once I got to the end, I practically ran to throw on the light switch there. Again, nothing. Kitchen next, and once again, nothing. I was starting to think I had dreamed it all before, and I went to turn off the kitchen light and stopped. Now I was a grown man, but here I was terrified to turn off the switch. And I'll admit it, I slept with all the lights on that night. That was a mistake. When I woke up the next morning, all the lights were off once again. I went to push myself out of the bed and winced as my body felt sore. I pulled the sheets off to see long red marks running down along my legs and arms. It looked like something scratched me in the night. That terrified the hell out of me, but not really so much as what I saw around the house. Every light I left on was smashed. Every light bulb that was on last night was broken. Every lamp knocked over and smashed in. My breath caught in my throat as I looked around. Something was fucked up as hell here, and something tried to, well, do something to me. I called in for work that day and went to immediately replace all the lights. I didn't know what to do then. I thought about leaving, but, and I know this probably sounds stupid, but this was my house. It was my first time away from my family, and this was my home. I couldn't give it up, so I stayed, even as it got worse. Even though I was beginning to become terrified of the dark, I couldn't really sleep with the lights on me at night in the bedroom. I'd leave another light on, though, like in the hall, in the living room, giving myself enough to see pretty well in the dark room. And almost every night I'd wake up in the middle of the night to hear something growling and prowling around the living room, and then the lights would shut off. I didn't want to go look. I was terrified as the thought of being in the same room with whatever that there was, so I curled up in my bed and prayed it never came in. One night after this went on for a while, I had it, and I bought a gun, and I turned on every light in the house, then sat down in the middle of the living room with my gun in my lap and a baseball bat sitting next to me. I waited. There was nothing at first for a long time, and around 2 a.m, I began to hear it oddly. It was behind me. I turned and peeked towards the hall of my bedroom, and I could hear the familiar growl. I swallowed and held my gun to one hand and the bat in the other and slowly began to step around to get a better view of the bedroom from the living room. As I began to get the view of my bed, I heard a loud thump, followed by an inhuman roar. I, being the brave man I was, jumped back and away from in the hallway. I wanted to end this all, but dear God, I didn't want to deal with that thing. I could hear tearing and smashing, but I didn't know how I caught it. But I did manage to hear the audible click and then nothing. Slowly, I went back to peek down the hall and the light was off once again. A deep breath and I ventured forth, my weapons ready. When I came to my bedroom, I flicked the light back on. I gasped. My bed was ravaged, torn completely apart. It was like some animal had jumped into it and ripped to shreds. I stepped forward and looked at what was left of the bed and just stood in shock for who knows when. It wasn't until I heard the sound of a familiar growl that I turned around, standing near my door, right at the light switch. Was when I finally saw it. It was a man, a white and rotting man with mangled body that looked like he had once been a dog's chew toy staring at me. I was too shocked to even raise my weapon. It stared at me in just moments and then flicked off the light. I screamed. I'm not even ashamed to admit it. I screamed and I bolted. I didn't care that was where that man had been standing. I ran past it where I had seen him, swinging my bat like a madman. I nearly put a hole in the hallway, and as I ran through into the safe light of the hall, I turned to look back, just to see him once again near the hall light switch. He turned that one off, too. By then, I didn't want the fight. I wanted to be safe. I burst past the living room and into the brightest of the kitchen. I heard a sound of growling and scratching nearly all around me, and then I knew he was coming back. I looked back once again to see his mangled and rotten corpse. A man turned off another light with a broken finger and plunged me into terrifying darkness. I broke for the living room. I was going to be my final stand. I had the fight here. I drew close to the standing lamp that was in the last line of defense. It hated the dark, so I didn't stay right here next to this comforting standing lamp. I waited for it to turn off. It never did. I looked around. Quiet. Nothing but quiet. I turned then to look at that saving grace of a lamp that refused to yield. I started to find myself laughing, a crazy but alive laugh, and I thought I'd finally be okay. I stepped closer, and I swear I almost hugged the lamp until I saw it. I heard the growl first coming, not from behind me, but in front, from that lamp. My eyes widened, and I stared at the light. I stared at the light. That lamp intensified. I stumbled back, and I don't know what happened, but I think I tripped on something. I just know I found myself flat on my back, staring up at the bright, intense light. It wasn't comforting any longer, just hot and heavy and bright. I thought it was going to burn me away, and then it came. I don't have words to describe what poured from that lamp's light. It was hideous, twisted, and filled with rage. I know I'll never forget those eyes, though. Bright, hot, and white. Those glowing circles of pure malice. It hated me. It hated everything about me, and not just me. It hated all of us, every human being. But it was stuck here, and it would lash out at what it could. Me. I don't know. I knew this, but I just knew. I lunged for me, and it prepared myself for the painful death. Click. The light went out. Once again came darkness. Sweet, quieting, relaxing darkness. I stayed on the ground for a long moment, letting my eyes adjust as I kept my gaze fixated on where my standing lamp was. As the seconds passed, I could start to make him out, the mangled man standing by my lamp, one torn hand upon the switch as he looked down at me. I understood then. I understood what it all meant, everything that happened. The man pulled his hand away from it and then pointed a mangled finger toward it before very clearly shaking his head from side to side. All I could find myself doing was nodding. He wasn't the one trying to harm me. All this time, all those instances, he had been trying to protect me. That creature could only come in the light. And this mangled man had been trying to keep me safe. He didn't want somebody else to repeat his mistakes. I moved out that very next day and never looked back. Whatever it was confined to that house, and so far nothing has come for me from another lamp source. However, that thing will always stick with me in the back of my mind. Every night in my new apartment, I made a habit of wandering around the house, making sure every light is off, every curtain is closed, and made sure to plunge myself in quiet, comforting, and safe pitch darkness.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That's an awesome story.
Wow.
Pretty crazy for a little creepypasta story, though, huh?
Well, yeah. I found it interesting that the man he thought was attacking him was actually there to save him.
And I also like the twist of where in every instance of all these stories, the light is always the saving grace.
Right.
It's always the thing that will help them either win or, you know, either whether it's an intellectual light or a physical light.
Mm-hmm.
And then this time it was the light that was
the danger.
Causing the danger.
Yeah.
In the darkness, the darker side of the story is that the darkness was the helping. It was the saving grace.
Right.
It was the comforting.
Very cool story.
To that. Yeah, it was a little long, but man, it actually ended up finishing really well. I liked I thought it was good. Interesting. Very, very interesting, like, twist on your classic.
Very.
But I guess that's what creepypasta is.
I'd make this into a movie.
Yeah. I mean, it would be, it would be a cool movie, I think, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so our next segment here is our movie review, as we always got.
Mm-hmm.
This week we have the movie called The Vault. The Vault is a 2017 thriller horror movie, they say online.
Yeah.
It was initially released in September 21st, 2017 in Russia. This is one of those Netflix branded movies, right?
Yep.
Like a Netflix original?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's also, you can see it on Netflix. So here we go. It is a, IMDb gave it a 4.8. I know Forrest has got some stuff later to say about that. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 25%. 25%. I mean, it's still better than a few other movies out there, like Nothing But Trouble. It's like 13%.
I know Chappie got like 4.
It was directed by a gentleman by the name of Dan Bush. It stars Francesca S. Eastwood, James Franco. Is it Taryn Manning?
Taryn Manning, yep.
There's a Kwieranka Kilcher, I think I butchered her name, and I'm very sorry. She's an extra lovely lady.
Mm-hmm.
She was the office manager there. Clifton Collins, you guys ever heard of him? He was the guy who was the detective or the police officer who was in charge of everything.
Okay.
Okay. Mm. And then you've got a couple side characters, and then like the brother, Scott Hayes. He was the brother in this situation.
Yep.
So two estranged sisters hatch a scheme to rob a bank to save their brother. The heist begins smoothly, but mayhem soon ensues when the defiant manager sends them to a basement-level vault where something truly evil dwells. The vault.
The vault. Okay.
All right, so, Forrest, what did you think of the beginning? Because you didn't see something at the very beginning that was very crucial to where Rachel and I come from in this respect.
Yeah. Okay, so starting with that beginning sequence, I thought it was interesting. You know, with the music having pertaining to, that's kind of like the theme song,
right,
from that whole backstory event. And then I didn't realize that those, like, the visual effects sequences in the beginning was pretty much pertaining to the whole horror-ish side of the story.
Yeah.
I didn't see it at all.
And if you're not keen, I guess you could maybe, like, not see it, but Rachel and I saw them
from the instant.
As soon as we saw the connection of the storylines on the newsprints in that first sequence, I knew exactly that this was going to be a major part of the story.
Oh yeah, so like obviously it opens up with newspaper articles and stuff about a cool fire music that's going on,
the deaths, how they died.
Yep, different stuff like that of a robbery that happened back in the 80s. In a bank, small bank, where this vault is kept.
But also,
and then it jumps back to the present day, I would say.
Right, but the confusing part of that whole thing is that there is an actual fire going on down the road.
Which they set.
Right, so eventually we come to realize where this fire, how that fire had started. But you get those news story clippings of that fire 8 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
And then cut to modern, and then there's a fire, so there's a
It's a little confusing.
It could be confusing, and what it makes you, like, Forrest kind of didn't realize that fire was talking about. He had thought that those news clippings may have been talking about that fire.
The current situation. Yeah. But no, that's what was going on back in the
Right. So it was, I think it was a good visual or storytelling effect that they used there to get you to think that, oh, okay, these were news stories, let's clip back to what was going on, why they posted the news stories and everything. But no, those news stories
will
lead into this next part.
Yep.
Then the camera jumps to James Franco standing in the kitchen. You can see in the background there's dishes in the sink. He's stirring his coffee. He's looking at the clock. And then you can tell he's having flashbacks. Instant. And that's when I instantly knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah.
See, Forrest didn't see it at all. I kind of didn't see it that early either. But at one point in the movie, watching it, I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I honestly really thought it was just like his psyche coming back to him to realize, like, oh, maybe he was in just another bank robbery in the past. But I didn't think of.
Oh no! I knew right away. The guy's dead. I'm just gonna say it. He's dead.
Spoiler.
He's there to help. The current situation. When he passed away, or he was killed in the first situation in the 80s. So here's this guy haunting this bank in a good way, trying to help these people.
But the majority, I guess, of the people don't see it yet.
Oh, God, no.
And basically what it is, we start off as like a bank heist movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Or what you would think is a bank heist movie.
Starts off very mysterious, too.
Right, and you know, all of a sudden it escalates quick. I mean, it's fast. These two sisters are trying to rob this bank to help their brother out. And things go shithouse crazy, you know, violence ensues. And then all of a sudden this James Franco character, I guess the character's name, Ed.
Yeah.
He convinces them that there's more money in the bank when they find out that there's none really in the vault in the bank. And they go, well, there's a vault downstairs where there's money.
Hmm. Yep.
And it all goes horror from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of got this weird, like, when you first see this first one go down there, you're like, what the fuck is going on? And then all of a sudden you see these people with, like, bag faces and burns. And
just popping up out of nowhere. Like, every time the camera pans back, there's a whole nother scary person with a scary bag on the face.
Oh, I didn't see some of that coming. Like, especially, I think, the first shot with that girl from Orange is the New Black.
That's Taryn Manning.
Yeah. Taryn Manning. Yep. She turns around and then, boom, there's this thing with this weird looking face that she runs into, and I'm just like, oh my god, like, where is this movie going?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then people end up starting getting killed off by these things, but not, they're not really getting killed off by these things, they're being,
it looks like
they end up doing suicide. Yeah. Like, I mean, on the video,
well, the way, so like one guy drills his own brain out,
and then another one puts a gun to his head and shoots his whole head off.
Yeah.
And then eventually everybody starts to see these things. Again, we're escalating to the point where the police come now. They know that the bank is being held up because of this mysterious call that's going out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But this mysterious call went out eight years before.
Oh, well, yeah. And
but we don't know this until the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When the big reveal is.
I knew that. I could recognize
it. Really? Again, Rachel figured it out.
So, like, so now, like, when I go into watching movies, especially for ones that we're going to talk about on the podcast, I pay attention more. Like, I'm more in tune. Seriously, during the open credits, I was like, okay, so there was a fire. A bunch of people died. All right, cool. You know, I prepare myself for it. So I don't know if that ruined it for me, but...
I've been looking at him a little bit more analytically, too, as well.
Right.
I'd say I'm like...
You're coming from it as a fan of horror in writing in movies, I think. Yeah.
Which is good. Stay that way.
Yeah, because you give us... Because you're always the one that's like, yeah, okay, this is a great... I thought it was great.
The thing, like, especially the thing that was like... I'm not going to lie, like, the first half hour, more like the first 10 minutes, because it's such fast paced in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
The movie starts from the inside out, pretty much, of the story, and not on the horror side, but more on the robbery part of the story.
Yeah, the heist.
The heist. Yeah. And literally, from the beginning sequence of this whole heist going on, I was just like, oh my god, like, it was just kind of aggravating. I was like, I want them to, you know, to do certain things, and like the way it was, like the pacing, when it came to the pacing, I felt like I was just getting aggravated.
Why? Because you thought it was going too fast?
In my opinion,
you think they could have slowed it down and put a little more story in it too?
Well, yeah, especially between the siblings.
Right, I mean, like, they just fight like normal siblings. You weren't really, it's just like a normal
sibling. But it's
sibling.
Like, well, then why is the brother, why is he in trouble? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Eventually, you know, you figure it out, but it's why not?
Yeah, because he owed money to somebody, obviously.
Well, yeah, he was missing a finger. Hello.
Yeah.
He owes a lot of money to a scary person.
But I mean, I think that visually... I mean, that's like the only thing that you're giving us to let us know that this guy owes a ton of money to somebody.
Oh, the movie's a complete mystery.
But then, like, if these sisters hated each other, seriously, why did they... Obviously, they have a mutual love for their brother, and that's probably what it was. Just this, we'll do this together to get him some money so he can, you know...
Not die.
Right.
Mm. One girl's psycho who doesn't believe in supernatural crap, though.
But she's just psycho in general. She's a fucking maniac. And then there's one girl who seems like she's like a nice girl. She's probably have a troubled past, but she doesn't want to be doing it at all.
Mm.
She's the one that's got the lead on the thing, too, which is...
Yeah.
Probably because she is the more level-headed one.
Well, from what I gathered, it seems like the older sister, the one who was running the show, really maybe had done that before. Or had to be in positions where she was taking the lead on scary situations like that. So it was an instinctual thing. But then she ends up crying like a little baby.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because she's too scared or she doesn't know what's going to happen. And that's crazy. It's just a bunch of craziness. But.
Yeah. And then we get to the payoff at the end. The first payoff. And then isn't there a second payoff?
There's a number of crazy twists and turns.
Like at the very end where the brother ends up committing suicide to blow up the bank. Basically to blow up the...
So the sisters can escape.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we think.
Yeah.
And then
so
after
what comes first? Is it the sisters reveal or is it the James Franco reveal?
I think the sisters reveal goes first, I believe.
No. Theirs is the last.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that last scene?
Because we do know where the guy with the mask comes.
Yeah.
While they're trying to get away.
Right. Yeah. With the money and. So that's the ending scene.
Yeah.
But see, like they could have eliminated that, honestly, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah, because the way it's more about the assistant manager and James Franco's character. Like they could have ended it right there. And had not known what happened to the sisters and the money. I would have been fine with that. You know what I'm saying?
Hmm.
I think that would have been a better way to end
the
movie.
But I guess it gives you like that classic horror movie ending.
Yeah.
Instead of keeping it more thriller-like without any type of like horror movie payoff, I guess.
You're right. I mean, like, in a way, though, the movie, even in like the more horror-ish part of the movie, it tends to get very personal with the characters very quickly. So I feel like it ties into that one ending part where they parked with the Jeep.
Yeah.
I feel like it was interesting because then you find out on the radio another thing. It's like they found out that they're technically dead. They're pronounced dead at the scene. And then.
Yeah, true.
And, but I don't know. I did feel like the movie even though it did get into a little bit of a documentary style towards like the end of the movie, I feel like they could have expanded that and made it maybe a little bit more horror-ish, creepy.
It was all right. Like, yeah. I was like, because I knew what was going to happen. Like, I called it right at that first scene when we were standing in the kitchen. I could just tell by the way he was dressed and the dishes in the sink. I just knew.
That's awesome, though.
I didn't catch the... I thought his attire was off for what with the time period.
And I
didn't realize that I had noticed it prior, but, like, I noticed that the kitchenware in the office looked a little outdated, the styrofoam cups and everything.
Yeah.
But I didn't really catch that until the end reveal with him, where they do show that he got killed and that he had died that day. I mean, the movie, I didn't really care for it. I'm glad it was over in an hour and a half. Maybe if they had put a little bit more into it, it might have been a better movie. But I can see where they were just trying to push a film out, get the story out, you know. Or it could have just been the writing. Like, they couldn't have made it any better either way because of the people who were writing it.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The shooting was amazing. I feel like towards the end when they went into, like, the whole detective piece with the survivors, I felt like that was needed. Basically, it shows a true reality on how victims are pretty much treated in investigations. But I feel like they could have either – they should have either not – pieced it in at all in the final cut, or they should have maybe overextended it a little bit.
Well, I think with the last scene in the detective, when they're asking questions, what's going on, cause it's more to get to the bottom line of who is this mysterious guy that everybody's talking about.
Yeah.
And that's when you find out that it's the guy who...
It's Jimmy James Franco.
And not just... murdered back in the 1980 robbery, so...
It got me. And then you find out, not only that, but in the footage, you find out in the security footage that they incorporate for, like, 5 seconds for every shot and throughout the whole movie, you figure out that it's showing them... What was it? Did it show them killing themselves? Or just showed, like, nothing there with blood? No,
it showed them doing the actions and everything.
Right, it showed them killing themselves.
Right.
With nobody, nothing around, no ghouls, nothing, you know, but in reality, these people were seeing these monsters and ghouls down there in the...
It's crazy.
I say watch it. Give you your own opinion on it. Some people are going to like it. Some people aren't. Yeah. I mean, we've just spoiled everything for you. if you've gotten through this point of the movie review. But, you know, we got to talk about it. Give us what we think about it. So I am going to score. Let's do our four best words review, movie review, Forrest.
Me first? I would say what the actual vault.
Hmm. What the actual vault.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rachel?
Okay, I guess.
That's a good one.
Even though it's only three words because I can't count. But it was okay. And that's how I feel. I mean, it was okay. I mean, I love James Franco. I find him... And Taryn Manning, too. I think she's a phenomenal actress.
The acting was great.
Yes. For some of the characters, some of them I could care less for. But those two, I really applaud their performance. So good job on that.
So my four words would go like this. I can't even find four words.
I have very up and down opinions about this movie. Yeah. Very up and down.
Was hopeful, let down.
Yeah.
Those are my four words, I guess. Was hopeful,
let down.
I give it a C-minus minus out of 4 gazillion genopples.
Okay.
So C-minus out of 4 gazillion genopples.
Forrest, what do you think?
I give it like a 6.5 out of 10.
Would you?
Yeah.
So like slightly over average.
A little bit above average.
You think so?
For going to 10, I give it like a 2. two out of 10.
2 out of 10?
Yeah.
Well, you and Rotten Tomatoes have a similar look on it. 25%.
Like a big thumbs down. Like
And Forrest, you guys, Forrest gave it a big. I was more like in the IMDb 4.8 probably. But.
The only thing I wish
that's
was...
because I was fooled. I mean, I was slightly fooled. Like it all came back to me when I during the review. All right, guys. Well, that concludes that segment, the Darker Side podcast movie review of The Vault. We gave our four word movie reviews and our scores. Let's move on to, let's dive deeper into the darker side. This week, as a topic, we're going to take ourselves to Spooky Street. We're going to cover the Bell Witch or the Bell Witch Hunting. That is a haunting that took place, let's see here. The Bell Witch or Bell Witch Haunting is a legend from Southern folklore centered around the 19th century Bell family of Adams, Tennessee. John Bell Sr., who made his living as a farmer, resided with his family along the Red River in northwest Robertson County, an area currently within the town of Adams. According to the legend, from 1817 to 1821, his family and the local area came under attack by an invisible entity able to speak, affect the physical environment, and metamorphosize anywhere. Some accounts record the spirit also to have been psychic and capable of crossing long distances with superhuman speed and or of being in more than one place at a time.
Almost like remote viewing.
Basically, or just able to instantly transform itself across the Atlantic to like places like England and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, a story like that comes into play further down the line. In 1894, a newspaper editor, Martin V. Ingram, published his Authenticated History of the Bell Witch. The book is widely regarded as the first full-length record of the legend and a primary source for the subsequent treatment. So people who study this phenomenon use this as the primary source. Eventually we'll see that people do have issues with this source,
mm-hmm.
because the sources coming from this source aren't necessarily sourced.
Yeah.
It's,
wow.
So let's see. The individuals recorded in the work were known historical personalities. In modern times, some skeptics have regarded Ingram's efforts as a work of historical fiction or even fraud rather than a nascent folklore study. Or accurate reflection of belief in that region during the 19th century. Let's see here. In the book, An Authenticated History of Bell Witch, author Martin Van Buren Ingram published that the poltergeist name was Kate.
Mm-hmm.
After the entity claimed at one point to be old Kate Batts, which Kate Batts was apparently John Bell Sr.'s one of their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
And apparently at one point these two had a gripe between, it was either land or property. The story's either way. Some say it was about land, some say it was about the sale of a slave that one of them had. It was a family member slave, and they had sold it off.
Yeah.
And Bats wasn't happy, but apparently she had passed away at some point, and the witch is claiming to be this old Kate or Kate.
Mm-hmm.
The physical activity centered on the Bell's youngest daughter, Betsy, and her father, Kate expressed particular displeasure, Betsy became, engaged in to a local man by Joshua Gardner. So Betsy, this younger daughter, was eventually, engaged to a gentleman, Joshua Gardner. And apparently this is when all of this started. Some people say it started around this point. Some people said it started a little earlier, but Kate apparently wasn't too happy with this engagement and did not like Mr.
Gardner,
Mr. Bell, or this Joshua Gardner. Okay. She didn't like either one of these people. So, the haunting began in late summer of 1817 when John Bell witnessed the apparition of a dog with the head of a rabbit. That's kind of weird. I guess the legend states that that's what he had saw out on his property. Bell fired at the animal, but it disappeared. Activity moved into the home with sounds of scratching, knocking, and smacking lips, with sheets being pulled from beds. The phenomenon grew in intensity as the entity pulled hair, slapped, pinched, and stuck pins in the family, with particular emphasis, again, on Betsy. Yeah. The it says that The Bells turn to a family friend, James Johnson, for help. After retiring for the evening at the Bell home, Johnson was awakened that night by the same phenomenon. That morning, he told the Bell it was a spirit, just like in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spirit. It's got to be one of them spirits that they talk about in the Bible. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, my God.
Soon word of the haunting spread with some traveling great distances to see the witch. So as soon as like people started to hear this from towns in different states, people were flocking to this area, apparently. Again, sources, whether the sources are true or just folklore. They were coming to see this like crazy. People would spend weeks, days there trying to either... Wow. Seeing these phenomenal, you know, paranormal activities or these apparitions or the voices and stuff like that.
It's crazy.
You know, it became kind of like a freak show in the area. So, you know, and at some point, the town and the townspeople were getting concerned about this. Let's see here. The apparition began to speak out loud and have full conversations and even at one point repeated words. Word for word, two sermons given 13 miles apart at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So she was able to give word for word one of the sermons in the voice of one of the preachers going on 13 miles away. And then she was also able to give word for word sermon in another preacher's voice that was happening simultaneously at two different parts of the town.
What the hell?
Yeah, so the spirit had known word for word and was able to apparently mimic the voices of these two pastors during these sermons.
Wow.
John Johnston, a son of James, devised a test for the witch, something no one outside the family would know, asking the entity his Dutch step-grandmother in North Carolina would say to the slaves if she thought they did something wrong. The witch replied with his grandmother's accent, "Hut, hut, what has happened now?" On another occasion, the Englishman stopped to visit and offered to investigate. On remarking on his family overseas, the witch suddenly began to mimic his old English parents. Again, at early morning, the witch woke him to voices of his parents, worried that they had heard voices as well.
Yep.
So he had like woke him up to his parents' voices of them discussing how they were worried because they were also hearing his voice.
On the other side about, of the ocean.
Yeah, about them being worried. About him being worried above his family.
Wow.
The Englishman quickly left that morning and later wrote to the Bell family the entity had visited his family in England and apologized for his skepticism. So.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
At times, the spirit displayed a form of kindness, especially towards Lucy, John Bell's wife.
Mm.
She would remark that she was the most perfect woman to walk to the earth. You know, the witch would give Lucy fresh fruit and sing hymns to her. Seriously, people, fruit was appearing out of nowhere, according to these stories and legends, where the apparition would just drop it on the table.
Yep.
Or they would say, well, here's something right here. And then it would, like, they'd find, like, a coin or something. They were giving these, like...
physical objects.
Out of absolute nothing. And, you know, in that time... I can't understand how they didn't have 17 priests in there trying to
I know, right?
to have like a mass exorcism or burn the place down and then have the entire community rebuild somewhere. It's crazy and weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very.
Let's see here.
Weird.
Referring to John Bell Sr. as Old Jack, the witch claimed she intended to kill him, and signaled this intention through curses, threats, and afflictions. So she just hated Old Jack or John Bell Sr. She despised this guy folklore goes back to saying that they had a dispute while they were alive.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, who knows if it was just a demon or something.
Right.
Stating that, just taking the voice of, you know, Kate, his old neighbor, who he had a feud with at one point, because he had already hated her anyway. Now the only way, the best way to get to this guy was to use the woman's voice that he hated the most in life.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good. Could be possible.
The story climaxes with Bell Patriarch being poisoned by the witch. Afterward, the entity interrupted the mourners by singing drinking songs at his funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So the family had found a vial on his nightstand the day they had found him dead. They don't know where it got there. They're not sure that John could have committed suicide.
Didn't they give it to the cat or an animal?
Right after. Right after they had given it. Yep, it was a cat. They gave it. Whatever the substance was in there, the cat died instantly.
The cat keeled over and died instantly.
So they knew that he had been poisoned, but they don't know if it was him or the witch or somebody else.
Yeah.
It could have very well been somebody else. It could have been, if we go back to the story, the daughter, Betsy.
Yep.
There was a person, a school teacher, who was really, really into her. He had moved into the town years previous, technically right before all this stuff started to happen. So there's a storyline there where he could have been the culprit. He could have been a ventriloquist, because he was a school teacher and befriended the family and was there all the time. So he could have been perpetrating some of this as well. Mm. So they say. But he could have also been the one that poisoned the father, so that, what's her name? And also, since that Kate hated Betsy's engagement, Betsy ended up ending the engagement.
Well, he called it off because he was like, well, fuck this. This is too crazy. I'm out of here. Bye.
And then the school teacher eventually ended up getting married to Betsy, and that's when things kind of slowed down. Mm. Let's see here. So John dies. Betsy interrupts the mourners by singing drinking songs.
Betsy or Kate?
Kate.
Yeah.
Kate does. In 1821, soon after Betsy called off her engagement, the entity told the family it was going to leave, but return in 7 years in 1828. The witch returned on time to Lucy and her sons Richard and Joel with similar activities as before, but they chose not to encourage it, and the witch appeared to leave again. Several accounts during that time where people were coming through say that during his military career, Andrew Jackson was intrigued with the story, and his men were frightened away after traveling to investigate, that he had actually stopped there.
As in former president Andrew Jackson?
Yeah, had stopped there and actually witnessed some of this stuff too. There are supposed accounts, again, not really well sourced and documented, that he had actually gone there and witnessed these things himself. In an independent oral traditional record in the vicinity of Panola County, Mississippi, the witch was the ghost of an unpleasant overseer John Bell had murdered in North Carolina.
Hmm.
In this tradition, the spirit falls in love with the central character, Mary, leading to her death, reminiscent of kind of like a vampiric type of lore. The supernatural powers attributed to the Tennessee spirit have also been compared to that of a djinn in mythology. In the manuscript attributed Richard William Bell, he writes of the spirit, whether it was witchery such as afflicted people in past centuries in the darker ages, whether some gifted fiend or hellish nature practicing sorcery for selfish enjoyment, or some modern science akin to that of mesmerism, or some hobgoblin native to the winds of the county, or a disembodied soul shut out of heaven, or an evil spirit like those Paul drove out of the man into the swine. That's a biblical story. Setting them mad, or a demon let loose from hell, I am unable to decide, nor has anyone yet divined its nature or cause for appearing. And I trust this description of the monster in all forms and shapes and many tongues will lead experts who may come with a wiser generation to correct conclusion and satisfactory explanation. That was William Bell, An Authenticated History of the Witch. That was in chapter 8 of that. Mm-hmm. So he says that I dare you to prove me wrong. But again, where the main source of this information is coming from is this gentleman who wrote
the book about it.
An Authenticated History of Bell, because I mean he was apparently the only source of this right. story, this nature. As I was saying before, you know how they have this skeptics, and you know these people who are saying that this was either a hoax first off, or the daughter Betsy perpetrating all this. You know, it goes back to that whole that whole thing where like these young daughters make these things up. And again, all these supernatural type stories, that's what everybody
blame the chick.
Right.
Like,
she's just being dramatic.
Right, exactly. Whatever.
She's got her period and she's making things up. She can pitch shift her voice and crawl on walls while she's doing this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ter period.
Yeah, so according to this gentleman, Ranford, the Bellwitch story is an important one for all paranormal researchers. It shows how easily legend and myth can be mistaken for fact and real events, and how easily the lines are blurred when sources are not checked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
During Dunning, another person wrote that there was no need to discuss the supposed paranormal activity until there was evidence that the story was true. Vague stories indicate that there was a witch in the area. All the significant facts of the story have been falsified, and the ones come from a source of dubious credibility. Again,
yeah,
checking the story. Yeah. Since no reliable documentation of any actual events exist, there is nothing worth looking into.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's a few news articles.
Because she's gone. Like, she didn't stick around or anything like that. Like, she said she'd be back in 7 years. She came back. They didn't encourage it, and she left.
Right. And then the only sources that they have are these news stories written by newspapers hundreds of miles away, like in Vermont or Wisconsin or, you know, down south even further, like in Georgia and stuff, far removed from these states. Again, and those stories didn't show up till weeks, months, maybe a half a year later. When it came to that. So these sources are completely unreliable.
Yeah.
And then this gentleman wrote his book based on those apparent and or, you know, what he would consider firsthand events.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But again, he's the one writing the book.
Or like a Bell there sticking to his guns, like, prove me wrong.
Right.
I know what happened.
Yeah, fuck you. Seriously. All right, so it says another thing here. Dunning concludes, I chalk up the Bell Witch as nothing more than one of many unsubstantiated folk legends vastly embellished and popularized by an opportunistic author of historical fiction. Radford reminds readers that the burden of proof is not on skeptics to disprove anything, but rather for the proponents to prove the claims.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Joel Nickel has written that many of these those who knew Betsy suspected her of fraud, and the Bellwitch story sounds suspiciously like an example of the poltergeist faking syndrome, in which somebody, typically a child, causes the mischief.
They're blaming that bitch again. Poor Betsy.
Yeah.
Oh, all this Betsy chick wanted to do was get married, and this chased off her fiance. And
it's a deeper story. There's a lot to this one. I just wanted to kind of hit it, you know, the way I did, give everybody, if you haven't heard about this, something to look into further.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But there's a lot there, and it mostly is just firsthand experience from this one gentleman. Then John Bell Jr. Ended up writing accounts of it as well.
Yep.
And those are the only ones, the accounts that you're getting, you could definitely be falsified or, you know, a money-making tool to sell books, especially after the fact and this local legend was built. But most local legends are built on something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There had to have been something, you know, and if the case was real, then what was this? Was it a demon? Was it some sort of, like, a djinn, like they had said? The activities involved with the creature.
Well, especially the fact that she could travel long distances, even across the world.
Instantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. I mean, so what is this thing? If it is something of a darker nature, a spirit, a demon.
Hell hath no fury, right, like I mean, a woman's like,
how can a spirit give you word-for-word sermons from these two churches from 13 miles apart?
She went across the country. She went to England.
Right. I mean, she went to England. I mean, there was a story of that, yeah. But
instantly.
Yeah, I mean, there was some, you know, other stuff that happened where she would, you know, would torture the family members. Not really torture, but, like, fuck with them hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you were to do, like, a ghost story, but, like, a spoof, kind of like a anything that the Wayans brothers made.
Yeah.
You know, in that respect, what is it, Spooky Movie or something?
Scary Movie, I think it was.
Yep.
Scary movie series.
Yeah.
But that type of, like if you were to do, like, a spoof on this, it would be, like, you got punk, bitch. You know, like, what the fuck? You. I'm going to poke you with a needle now. You know, like.
I do both. I do spoof and horror.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. But that's that story, you guys. I mean, you've heard about it a little bit, Richard.
Yeah.
You knew kind of, you've heard of like kind of astonishing. Was it
Astonishing Legends?
Yeah, they did
this. Another podcast, great guys.
They did nice. Another Forrest. Yeah,
post. Another Forrest Burgess.
Forrest Burgess.
Wow,
good podcast. If you guys haven't listened to any of this, their podcast. I mean, it's huge. You probably have heard of it, so listen to that one as well. But that concludes us diving deeper into the Darker Side Podcast. Nice. Diving deeper into the Darker Side, everybody. This time, it's time for a segment I like to call Getting Lost in the Forest. This is a segment where Forrest basically rants about a subject and topic that has chafed in his ass or hurt in his heart or, you know, making him sick. Whatever it is, you know, whatever topic that he decides that he wants to rant about, what he's feeling passionate about, he's feeling heat, he's feeling the fire. For
angry!
It. Yeah, I guess this one's an angry one.
I got really upset this weekend.
So let's get lost in the forest.
Okay. Hey guys, it's Forrest. So this is a story that I got from BBC News. I'm sure it's on all the other news sources and whatever. So President Trump has signed a memorandum that bans some transgender people from U.S. military service, but rolls back the blanket ban he ordered last year.
What?
What's the blanket ban?
Blanket ban was every transgendered person, any person of transgender, cannot serve in the military. Apparently he's taken that away, but he's also now going transgendered.
Okay.
Yeah. Do we have any idea as to what type of transgendered people or were being targeted for this?
Well, I know somewhere I read that they said that this exception, will be a very slim percentage of
transgender persons. But persons. Like, what is the reasoning behind it? Are these the post-operative transgendered persons?
Hey, let me see here. The new memorandum says that transgender individuals with a history of gender dysphoria are barred from military service, except under certain limited circumstances.
Well, how does that work then? Because if, like...
What is, first of all, do you know what gender dysphoria is, Rachel?
When you think you're of the opposite sex, which that's how transgender people are. So I don't understand that at all. That makes zero sense.
Right.
But
gender
dysphoria basically means that you were given the body parts that you have, but your mind and you have a feeling that you're the opposite sex that you were born with.
So they're saying that you can't, this type of person who actually has passion about the fact that they are a female or, you know, born a female or in a male's body or a male in a female's body, are not going to be able to serve in the military in certain circumstances.
That's correct.
So, but like, to me, so the person who knows that they're saying, I think, is that the person who knows that they're born a male but just want to be female are going to be okay and be able to serve in the military. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So
this is the story behind it. So tell us your passion and why you are chafed by this story going on here.
Well, for one, I mean, it's the T in the LGBT. I mean, you affect one group, one subgroup, you're going to affect all of them pretty much. I mean, with social media and, you know, how easy it is to have access to news, whether, you know, with whatever it might be, I feel like this is kind of just fucked up, especially since last year the president has already pretty much put through a ban, and supposedly he's blaming the GOP or Democrats, I guess, because they had some time frame to, I guess, update it to their standards or something, and they, I guess, chose not to really touch up on it, so... It has to do with, like, the Department of Defense submitted a report to the president, which said allowing those with a history of gender dysphoria to serve entailed substantial risks and could, by exempting them from existing physical, mental, and sex-based standards, undermine readiness.
Substantial risks?
Yeah.
So, really? Really?
It just seems like they're just trying to get something, some sort of little... transgender thing in
so transgender people are substantial risks. to the military and defending our country.
I think any person who's willing to serve the military, to sign up for the military and is willing to give their lives up regardless of sexuality, creed, religion, etc.
is already a substantial risk.
Is already a substantial risk. Yeah. Should have the right to serve in the military.
Mm-hmm.
If you're of legal age and a citizen of this country, you should have the ability to regardless.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I mean, you're giving your life to protect
a nation. You're giving your life to the nation, regardless whether it's to protect it or whatever. You're giving your life to that nation for a contracted period of 4 years. You're stating that I'm giving you the power over me for 4 years to do what you want to me.
Yep.
So I don't care what that person is or whatever.
Right.
Yep, male, female, gay, straight, trans, non-trans.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
And, like, the crazy thing is that, supposedly, according to the DOD, it will impose an unreasonable burden on the military. It's not on this source, but I have seen stories and I've also seen videos of people who are actually, like, higher-end commanders who are involved in the Army and make these kinds of decisions. And they're the ones, when these kind of bans come in, they're the ones that have to impose them. And I guess supposedly a lot of them haven't been imposing them since the first ban.
Because they didn't really want to.
No, you're right. Or they just didn't care. And they're saying that this kind of thing is actually more of an impose because, I mean, there's a lot of, and let's be real, there's also a lot of gay people
mm-hmm.
in the service.
Tons.
And, I mean, how do you think they're going to feel about this?
Well, right. What was the don't ask, don't tell policy?
For a long, long time, obviously. But now it's open. You can serve as a gay, straight, lesbian, or whatever, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, I just think it's just another thing that these people need to focus on to attack a certain type of people, get them in the limelight, and get you focusing on this so that they can do backhanded, shady shit.
And what really grinds my gears about this is that during Trump's campaign, he held the LGBT flag and said, you know, I will make sure our LGBT Americans are treated equally, even though we're still not equal under the law. And he held that flag. And I had a friend that was gay and he still supports Trump. And I think it's bullshit that it's all coming out now that a lot of his campaign is pretty much a lie.
Oh, God, yeah.
And his own voters and supporters are not even owning up to this fact. It's like, you know, well, like, how am I supposed to feel about this kind of ban?
Right.
You know, I mean, if he's doing it, then maybe it's a right thing. I don't know. I think it's just fucked up. It really pisses me off.
Yeah.
And
I can see it in your face.
Personally, I support our troops. I would never personally enlist, even though I had to, you know, for the draft. But I support them if they want, if they're qualified in the standard regulations that they need to qualify to go into the service. I also couldn't because of my ADD, asthma.
Right, right.
I took medication for ADD, so I'm already disqualified. I say, you know what? Let them fight. Let them fight because mm-hmm. you know what? You never know during Trump's campaign, his time in the White House, you never know. I feel like we are definitely going to go into some kind of war.
Well, who knows? I mean, that's speculation. You know, hopefully we can grow above it and get out of this. But Forrest, thank you very much for giving us your passion, giving us your fire, little side on what you consider the darker things in life, and you know, a good portion of society is with you in this.
And we
like it. Every week you give us another thing to think about. Outside of the spooky, more of like the terrifying reality of the world.
Yeah. The real scary shit.
Social injustices and stuff like that. And again, that's the part of the darker side of this world we live in. And it's pertinent and important to the Darker Side podcast that we can get some of these things out there for people to think about. Whether you agree or not. We are always open for discussion on our Facebook page, on our Twitter. Apparently, we now have an Instagram, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because cool. I did something on Facebook that made me start one on Instagram. So there's Instagram now, the Darker Side podcast. Nice. So maybe one of us will get the passcode and we'll figure out how to post some photos and stuff there.
Baby steps.
Thank you guys, Forrest. What a great show. Wonderful show,
awesome
man. We
show.
Had some great stories, new stories.
Thank you
stories.
Guys again for having
Rachel,
me.
Rachel, as always, we love having
appreciate
you here.
It.
And hopefully you'll
thank
either
you. Yeah, nice
come back you. Every episode or when you can. And,
awesome.
Oh, yeah.
When you're not too busy with...
There's a 5-year-old that has taken over
in the life that we live. I am David Pottle, your host for the Darker Side podcast. Thank you very much again, everybody, for coming back, listening to what we got to offer, give a little bit our twisted news stories and creepypastas and such. You can find me on Facebook. You can find my band Frenemy Providence on Facebook. We'll be playing down in Providence this coming up weekend with Hatebreed. Also we'll be playing a show on the 7th with a gentleman called Dirk Schneider. He used to be the lead singer for a band called Accept, who did the song Balls to the Wall. So we'll be playing our rock and roll music there. All right, so guys, you can also find me at Life Relationships and Everything in Between podcast with my other co-host, Kevin Spurl. Again, find me on all the social medias and everything else. Forrest, how about you?
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. I really appreciate it. It's nice to have you, Rachel, on the show again.
Thank you again.
It's a lovely time. And, you can find our podcast online. We're on the interwebs, iTunes, Facebook, all that good stuff. My company, Forrest Films, on iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, all that good stuff. Once again, thanks for listening. Please subscribe, share, like, dislike, comment on iTunes, Facebook. Start a conversation, either way, we like it. We love conversation.
Oh, yeah, we do.
And, anything creepy, if you have anything creepy to share with us.
Yeah, if you get any creepy pasta out there, share it, send it to our Gmail. It's thedarkersidepodcast@gmail.com, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, and any news, any type of news that you got, fucked up crazy news out there, send that as well to us, guys.
Or any topics you guys want to talk about. Any topics
you want us to hear about.
Facebook message.
Yeah, exactly. Any of those things. And Rich, you got any final words or anything?
Thanks again for having me, guys. Always a pleasure. I'm hoping to be back again soon.
Cool, cool. All right, guys. Thanks again for coming back and listening to us here at the Darker Side podcast. Till next week, try to stay out of the darker side.
Darker side.
Podcast. Ooh.